You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Pretty good. Full disclosure, I'm going to be doing the first 15 minutes of this episode standing up.
Yes, you will, because this is a really nice nice system at the top. So right. I'll be interested to see what you think in terms of maybe kind of the depth of the organization, because I don't know much about that, but definitely some guys right at the top of the organization that we both think, and I think a lot of people think, will be fantasy superstars at some point. So before we jump into the Toronto Blue Jays, remind everybody you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB, me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. So let's start it off. We got Bo Bichette. We've got Vlad Guerrero Jr. Go ahead and just fire away.
Vlad Guerrero Jr. is obviously number one. Going back and forth on this as far as Acuna one, which isn't going back. That's been solid. Guerrero, Eloy, and Tatis have kind of been 2, 3, 4. I've settled on Guerrero being my number two guy. I know I said different in the Padres podcast with Tatis, but I'm bumping Tatis down a notch for Guerrero. Because there's literally nothing this dude doesn't do on offense. You might get a little greedy and complain about stolen bases, but if you complain about stolen bases with what he gives you, I'm going to come over there through the internet and punch you in the face. Because, you know, there's no offensive talents like this don't come around very often. His upside is high enough where he has a chance to be a first baseman that you take first overall in fantasy drafts. That's how high the upside is. When's the last? Was Miguel Cabrera first round pick in fantasy? He was the first overall pick in fantasy a couple years back, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and he could be in that mold for Guerrero. I mean, that's a different. That's one of the outcomes. He's a third baseman now. I think ultimately he does like Edwin Encarnacion in his career. Edwin played third for quite a few years. I want to say 3, 4, 5 years, then moved over to first base. I think that's what's going to happen here. Moving to first base would eliminate one of his strongest tools, which is his arm. But Baseball America, you know, is the best source out there. If you don't subscribe to them, I recommend that you do. I always check out their list because they don't do the fantasy slant. They just do, you know, everything defensively and everything on the 20 to 80 scale. I haven't seen a hitter get graded like this since Oscar Tavares. And he had, his grades weren't quite as high as this. Baseball America put an 80 on Guerrero's hit tool and they put a 70 on his power. The short list of players that comp, Manny Ramirez with Boston days, that's mm-hmm. probably similar to him. That's the offensive talent we're looking at. I saw Guerrero and Bichette and a lot of other players play this year when they rolled through Kane County that he played for Lansing in the Midwest League. And him and Bichette just have this feel to them. You know you're watching somebody that's really good. Like you're watching an artist. You know, you go to a concert and you're watching, you know, whoever – I don't listen to much music, but whoever the best is at whatever, you're watching them. And that's what you get to feel when you watch Guerrero, except he's, you know, playing in bars right now because he can't get to the show yet. And that's kind of what he was doing. He's not old enough to get into bars either, by the way. But the talent this guy possesses is unbelievable. All he did this year at 18 years old, doesn't turn 19 until March, at 18 years old was go 323, 425, 485 across two levels of A-ball, one of them being the toughest environment to hit in the Florida State League. He went 333, 450, 494 there, 36 walks, 28 strikeouts. Overall for the season, 76 walks, 62 strikeouts, even chipped in 8 stolen bases. So he's more athletic than he looks. Has a howitzer, has an arm. I think you can expect the most ridiculous offensive numbers to come out of this guy because he's a bat first prospect all the way. You know, he's got the arm though. He's not quite bat first, but for fantasy, his value and fantasy value and real life value don't change too much because even if he has to move to first base, who cares? It doesn't matter because the skills are that good. Guerrero is a monster. Future best hitter in baseball upside.
Nice.
Yeah. Right, so
what about Mr. Bo Bichette?
He was he's a tough player for me to rank because I've been high on Bichette for a while. I always thought it was just kind of me being unreasonably high, but you know, all of a sudden everybody in the industry seems to have caught up. And I kind of turned into a guy that's, I don't want to say the low guy, but my rankings aren't as high as others anymore, which is fine. I just worry about the long-term position for Bichette because if they're going to let Guerrero play third, that's probably Bichette's best spot long-term. But, you know, not much to – that's semantics at this point, though. Second-round pick in 2016, 5'11", 201, got the luscious flow, the curly locks, led the minor leagues in batting average, which, again, at a young age, like I'm trying to pull it up exactly – at 19 years old, turns 20 in March, so he's a year older than Vlad. Hit 362, 423, 565. As a teammate at Guerrero, they got called up at the same time, you know, in lockstep with each other. 41 doubles, 4 triples, 14 homers, 22 stolen bases. Played second base and shortstop. I think his future home is probably second base out of that. I don't think he can play short in the major leagues. But you're looking at a guy, loud contact. The swing is beautiful. High leg kick. It's got a little bit of a bat wrap, meaning the first move he does is the hands go back and the barrel of the bat kind of goes behind the head. But the bat is so fast that it doesn't matter. The bat's so fast that the bat wrap, it isn't even a problem. I wouldn't even mess with it. I wouldn't even try to fix it if I was the Blue Jays because it's that good. It's a thing of beauty. Again, I question the defensive home. But, I mean, I think you're looking at a guy in Bichette here whose own right is a top 20 fantasy prospect because I think he can go 300 2015. And he is the safest bet of anyone in the minor leagues for me to hit over 300 in the majors. He shortens up with two strikes. He's a good hitter. You can tell he's had the best coaching his entire life with, you know, son of major leaguer, just like Vlad Guerrero. That's one of the things people don't think about. Yeah, he's got superior genes, hand-eye coordination, but he's also had access to the best coaching since day one. You know what I mean? He gets to hang around his – they're both Dante Bichette and Vlad Guerrero were both pretty good hitters last time I checked. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got access to them. You got access. You're around a major league clubhouse when you're growing up as a kid. You know the finer things a little bit more than other people do. And I read reports that seemed kind of silly even up to the last offseason that because Bo Bichette and Brendan Rodgers both played high school in Florida, they both played against each other. I read reports that Bichette was better than Rodgers. And I kind of dismissed him saying, oh, maybe it was a bad view on Rodgers, but I would take Bichette over Rodgers, I think, now. Because Bichette has the walk rate that Rodgers doesn't have, which scares the daylights out of me. And, you know, a guy that goes 14 and 22, and I think power is, he hasn't even tapped into all of his power yet. Mm-hmm. And another underrated aspect of Bo Bichette as well, he's a student of the game offensively. He researches everything. I've read a lot of articles. His preparation is intense. His teammate, well, maybe if they don't trade him, Josh Donaldson is the same way. You know, you watch Donaldson, he has an unorthodox view of hitting. Their swings are kind of similar with the high leg kick and the bat wrap and everything. Who's to say, you know, him and Donaldson together can't make Bichette a better hitter? Little things like this, that they both – Toronto is one of those free-flowing organizations that pretty much lets you as a hitter. They don't pigeonhole you. They let you get away with what you want to do until you fail, and then they might force an adjustment on you or suggest things to you, but they pretty much let you do a lot of things on your own, which a lot of organizations don't do. And, you know, Bo Bichette, man, I was crushed that I didn't get him in RDI. I didn't expect to because I knew I wouldn't be the high man in that league. And Bo Bichette, man, I'm very, very excited. I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm going to assume I know what your answer is going to be. Gleyber Torres or Bo Bichette? Because for me, it's Bichette.
It's not close. I mean – I think Gleyber Torres is a very, very good real life player. I don't think he's necessarily
right.
going to be a fantastic fantasy player. You know, I
right.
think this is also the time to sell Bo Bichette if you're looking to do that. If you're not a rebuilding
team.
Sell
him to me. Shit, I'll buy him from
him. Well, I just sold him in two leagues. And I love Bo Bichette. I'm right there with you. I bought in from day one. I had him on virtually all my Dynasty leagues. I can't remember if I have him in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits one. But I just sold him literally today. I traded him and Max Kepler for Odor and Posey in an Audinu league. Because I'm trying to make my team a win-now team. And then I believe if I'm – actually, I may still have him in one of my other Dynasty leagues. So, or I can't remember if I traded him or not. Oh, no, I did trade him. In an Odor trade, I traded him – believe for Odor and Paxton, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not an Odor guy, but you know, if it's not an OBP league, Odor doesn't kill you. So
yeah.
But you know, I went to, like I said, I've watched Guerrero and I've seen Bichette play. I saw him on a 3-game set when they came through the closest park to me, minor league park, and I was I was impressed with him. I don't need to tell you how great he is. I pretty much have. Everyone else will too. And I was impressed with Bichette. You know, the thing with Guerrero, though, Guerrero's walk rate is twice of what Bichette's is, and Bichette's is fine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that just shows you how advanced Guerrero is. But, like, Bo Bichette is a monster. He's going to play all season at 20. He's going to probably start in the bull. Him and Guerrero will probably both start in double A. And if Toronto really wanted to be aggressive, they could call both those two up. But, I mean, they just acquired. You know, in the second half, I doubt they do because why? You know, I don't see Toronto as a competitive team this year. I'm probably in the minority on that, but I think with the infield depth they've acquired in Solarte and Aledmys Diaz, they probably no need to call either one of these two up
mm-hmm.
for the stretch run. But I think they'll be in Double A. When you're in Double A, you're one phone call away. But definitely 2019 debut for both of these guys, and I
don't think it's out of the question to say that this team. Could compete. I think they're going
for what to. Though? I mean, a wild card spot, cool.
Well, but you know. I mean that means something. We've seen wild card teams,
right? We have
go on to win World Series. I mean, you know,
I'm just salty they won't trade Donaldson to the Cardinals, but
well, I'm salty they won't trade Donaldson to the Giants, but like that doesn't change my opinion as an analyst. I mean,
right.
You know, look at you know if they decide to keep Donaldson. You know, and
which I could see that because I think they have a chance to re-sign him. Like
yeah.
The Machado Baltimore thing is dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have no chance to re-sign him. They need to trade him, but they won't.
Well, and I think you know, Teoscar Hernandez is an interesting guy. If he can live up to some expectations some people have to him, he could be really good if Pilar kind of recovers a little bit of the form. I like Solarte as a guy who can play all around the infield, but also gives them some Devon Travis insurance. Aledmys Diaz is a guy that you really liked, you know,
right.
coming into
I still
last
like him.
Year. Yeah.
Bats a ball. The bats a ball is
you know,
is
so
unreal.
That's, at worst is Troy Tulowitzki insurance.
Right.
You know, and then that rotation, you know, could be a lot better than I think people give it credit for. You know, I believe in Estrada to bounce back at least a little bit.
Aaron Sanchez
can keep his finger skin intact. You know, Marcus Stroman is a bona fide, you know, front of the rotation kind of guy. I think Jay Happ's always underrated. And, you know, then there's guys in the minor leagues that could come up.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not a stretch. But I guess they have a chance to re-sign Donaldson, so they might as well keep him, you know.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
You know, the Guerrero and Bichette are probably my favorite duo. I probably like them better than I like Eloy and Kopech. I know I have Eloy and Kopech rated higher, but I just love these two guys. I think they flow together. They both play potentially on the same side of the infield. I mean, that'd be cool to watch. Two guys come up at the same day, you know, major league pedigrees, millionaires since they were born, you know, make more money. It's fun.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on to some other guys. Who else might be close to the major leagues?
Anthony Alford. He's a guy I kind of like this year, too. He's a... His athleticism is off the charts. Former football commit, I want to say, to Southern Mississippi. I believe he was a defensive back. finally playing baseball full time, and you know, he's reaping the benefits of it. Had a nice year in Double A, 310, 406, 429. Got called up for a nice brief sample in the big leagues. Didn't do anything, but it's an eight at bat sample, so I'm not gonna hold it to him. 82% contact rate in Double A, 83% in his 12 at bat cup of coffee in Triple A, 63% in Major League. So it's not hard to figure out what happened. I think he's, you know, the natural strength and loft he gets, quick bat. I think he's going to be a average and stolen base contributor out of the gate. I think he's got gap power. As he gets stronger and turns his football body into a baseball body, I think he's going to get more home runs, and I think he's a top of the order threat because he knows how to take a walk. 13% in Double A, 8% Triple A, 14% in Florida State League 2 years ago. So while he hasn't always hit, he's got the eye, which is a hard thing to teach. So in order to have that innate ability already, which is nice. One thing I am questioning is only 265 at bats above High A, but he's in position now that he's going to have to challenge for a Major League roster spot because he was a 2012 third round pick, meaning this is the last year he can get sent down to the minor leagues after 2019. He would, if he's not called up, he's already on the 40 man, so it wouldn't apply, but you get 6 years after you're drafted. So this is his last year to get sent down if they want to send him down. But I think ultimately he's a true five tool talent. It's going to take him a while to get there because, like I said, he's only been playing full-time baseball for about 4 years now. Cause even after he was drafted, he still played college football. They let him play college football for a year or two, which is unheard of now. Even the teams don't let you do that now, but he's a true five tool talent. Eventually the home runs aren't going to be there yet. The RBIs aren't going to be there yet because he's not a middle of the order bat, but that could give him a couple years. And you're looking at a guy who could be, you know, 280 with 20 homers and 25 steal upside. Like, he's that type of hitter. He's a nice lotto ticket. If you're in a situation where you need major league at bats now, but you know, you're also not, your window to contention is not quite open, this is your guy, because he can kind of grow right along with you.
All right. Other guys that are close to the majors?
Richard Urena was up last year, and I'm not really on him. I look at Urena as he supposedly has 20 homer upside in the bat. I don't see it. I'm down to more toward the 15 mark, and he doesn't do anything well. He does a lot of things well, but nothing great. Reached the majors at 20 in last year as a 21-year-old, which was nice. Didn't do much. In Double A, he made the jump from Double A to the majors. In Double A, he had 247, 286, 359, and they called him up. 80% contact rate, went down to 59 in his 70 at bat sample in the majors. So obviously, you can see the problem. He's very, very young. I think he needs a year at Triple A. Disappointing year. I guess you can buy low if you kind of believe in the profile. I don't. I think he's going to get passed up by Bo Bichette fairly soon. But he's the shortstop of the future, if they have one, I guess, would be Urena. I'm not a big fan of the profile, but he's there. So Danny Jansen has a chance to probably be the backup catcher behind Russell Martin out of spring training. Dude exploded on the scene this year. He went from a guy who was unheralded, hit one home run in a couple seasons in the row in the minors, and now you're looking at a guy, he hit 10 home runs last year. I want to get the full batting average numbers across all three lines, across all three levels. He was a pop-up guy in every sense of the word this year. Catching prospect, so I'm not going to roster him. But, you know, 16th rounder in 2013, so, you know, he's worked and grinded his way through. 323, 400, 484 line in High A, Double A, and Triple A this year for the Blue Jays with 25 doubles and 10 homers. He's a modest upside guy. I think he's a potential. If he's a good option for a catcher two maybe next year, and I think ultimately the ceiling could be something like, you know, 280 with 10 to 12 homers, which puts him on the landscape for a catcher. So, you know, that's about it for guys that could contribute this year. Lourdes Gurriel.
Did you talk about Roddy Tellez?
I didn't actually. No, good. Thank you. I did forget about Roddy
because he's my guy. That's why.
Well, yeah, you ride or die, because last year probably tested your.
I bought him last year when he struggled.
222, 295, 333 line in AAA. Not great, Bob. 29 doubles, one triple, six homers. Obviously, something was going on because he went from 23 homers to six in the same number of at-bats. So something's going on with a left-handed swinger. Not very athletic. Kind of fits in the Dan Vogelbach mode for me without the walks. So significantly lower in value, but he's also a guy, until Justin Smoke's emergence, he kind of, what a terrible year. You struggle, and then Justin Smoke takes off. Like, you think you have a stranglehold on that job long-term after your fantastic 2016 season when Justin Smoke put up another stinker, and then Smoke goes off, and then you get bombed the other way. Not a good, not a good sequence of events for Tellez in 2017. I think he rebounds. I still have faith in him. I think he can be, a 260 bat with, 18 to 20 homers, which will play in AL-only formats. So not the highest upside, but there's some level of safety here if he gets enough playing time. Lourdes Gurriel, utility man all over the map. Still really don't know what he is just because, anytime someone's been in pro ball in the States that short time, it's hard to really put a gauge on it. It makes a lot of contact, doesn't walk, doesn't really have a standout skill, 5 homers and 3 stolen bases. I think he's a modest contributor in batting average and home runs and chips in a few steals. I mean, he's not the greatest profile. His best asset, honestly, is probably the ability to play anywhere. So he might be a good – he played exclusively shortstop in the AFL, which I thought was interesting. But he's got an advanced approach, which is unique for a Cuban. Not to stereotype those guys, but most of those players come over here swinging, right? He's not that type. He's kind of like his brother in the sense he's got some patience and knows how to work a count. Logan Wormuth was the top draft pick this year out of their second pick, out of North Carolina. He's a shortstop. I think he's a high batting average contributor, and he can probably chip in a few steals. I'm not very aggressive on the power development. I don't think he hits for much power with the wood bats. Nate Pearson is a sexy arm to follow. Dude gets it up to 95-plus on the mound. It's going to be a little bit because he come from Florida International, FIU, 6'5", 190, so he's got projection. I like the delivery. He can locate the fastball, uses the slider as a knockout pitch, and also has a plus curveball. Changeup flashes a little bit. Everything I've read seems to indicate that they think he's a long-term reliever. I think he can start. Huge strikeout numbers. Well, I'm on board. Sean Reed Foley has kind of slipped down the ranks for me. Had a rough year in Double A. Pitched to a 5.09 ERA. Strikeouts dropped from 11 to 8. Walks went up to from 2.5 to 3.5. Not a good sequence of events. He normally gets by with, the steep ground ball play and a lot of deception. Didn't really, didn't go his way. Probably a lot of unfortunate batted ball luck. But he still can be a number 3 starter in fantasy because he should pile up the strikeouts. I think he bounces back a little bit. Command needs to get better, but that comes with age. TJ Zook put up a nice Arizona Fall campaign. Nice heavy ground ball guy, 6'7", 220, massive frame. Not sure why he doesn't get more hype. He's not going to blow the doors off. He's probably going to be a 7-8 strikeout per 9 guy in the majors, which is probably why, but he's a safe option. He reminds me a lot of Joe Biagini, that type of role. For the Blue Jays, I think he can fit the swingman role or even 5 starter, which I think he could be better than that. But, Toronto might rush him up because they're not pitching deep as everyone maybe thinks they are. Very hard, heavy bowling ball sinker with a slider and a big breaking curveball. A lot of guys with the sinker slider combination are usually vulnerable against lefties because they don't really have a pitch to neutralize offhand sliders, off opposing batters from the left side. And his changeup isn't that great either, so that's another reason why that might be a thing. But TJ Zook, I kind of like this guy as a mid-rotation arm or a late-inning bullpen guy. I don't think there's really any in between here. Max Pentecost, he's not gone yet. Multiple shoulder surgeries, and he's still a catcher. And he can still
hit.
For
how long, though? I mean, that's the question. I mean, they've got, like you said, got Danny Jansen, got Reese McGuire.
Right. I should correct myself. Three shoulder surgeries since 2014. Jesus. So he's seen time at catcher, first base, and DH last year. Real short swing, contact geared, 78% contact ability in the Florida State League after missing pretty much a whole season prior. So, he needs to work on his catch and throw skills, and I can imagine after 3 shoulder surgeries, that's probably not much in the arm left. But, he's a catching prospect that should move fast. He's a 2014 first-round pick. Should move fast from here on out, I should say. I think he's got some batting average upside. I think he can hit 290. And I think he could hit 15 to 20 home runs in this day and age. So I'm not giving up on Pentecost yet. You shouldn't own him anywhere, though, just because catching prospects and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, I think he's a guy in AL only league you could take a shot on. Because Russell Martin isn't going to be around that much longer. So, really the last guy I want to touch on, I like Ryan Borucki from the left side, throws hard, piles up the strikeouts, needs to work on command and staying healthy. Justin Mays, I watched him pitch. Ready for this? I was in A-ball, at an A-ball game watching, you know, Bo Bichette and Guerrero, and Justin Mays pitched that game, a complete game in low A. You don't see that very often.
No, not at all.
Mays had a few of those this year. He obviously he was worn down at the stretch. I think he's probably a glorified number four starter, but he's nasty. He's got that bulldog stuff. He'll go get you. Yeah, it was fun watching him pitch. Got a nice curveball. You can tell he wore down the last couple innings, but to see a kid like that, I mean, throw a couple complete games, because he's trying to build up his arm strength because he missed some time. He's a ground ball guy. He knows when to spot the fastball. Goes fastball high. It's fun to watch. He's got really good stuff, loose athletic delivery. He's a guy I bet on to be a little bit more than the ceiling indicates, so I'll take a shot there. Ryan Noda put up crazy numbers in the GCL, but he's a college bat, but he's a first base only, but you follow that. Hagen Danner and Riley Adams are two more young catchers in their system that have potential. And Eric Pardinho, he was a 16-year-old when he pitched in the World Baseball Classic out of Brazil. And they signed him this year. He hasn't pitched a pro ball. They're going to move super slow with him. But he should be advanced. I kind of think he might be similar to Adrian Morejon when he's in a couple years, when he gets more time under his belt and stuff. Because any 16-year-old that can get major league hitters out in a brief stint is pretty good. So, you know, he's doing that in the World Baseball Classic. But Toronto's system is okay. It's, you know, probably with Bichette and Guerrero, still probably in the 20 to 25 range.
Just
so you
very
take the
top heavy,
right? It's extremely top heavy, and the depth gets real thin really fast. My last couple guys on this list, I settled on John Harris in the write up, only because he was a first round pedigree, and I watched him pitch at Missouri State, and I liked him. The numbers indicate he shouldn't be on the list, but I'm sticking to my guns because I liked what I saw when he was in college. Hope he can find that. Connor Green is another pitcher like that. He's kind of wonky strikeout numbers and high walk numbers. He's Charlie Sheen's friend, I guess, from his dad, and Charlie Sheen are friends. His dad's an actor. Connor Green was an actor, I guess, for a little bit. So he's got the actor shot and stuff, the glamour photos. It's kind of funny to watch. But, you know, he's another arm that I think has better stuff. And Toronto's weird with their pitchers. A lot of their pitchers go through these weird stages where they completely forget to strike guys out and the walks go up. Maybe they have them working on secondaries heavy during that time, which we don't know. I bet on that probably being the reason, but I guess we should have done this with every system, but my rundown, I guess, for the Blue Jays is it's extremely top-heavy, like you said. There's a couple arms in here that I like more than others, but in between that is I'm not a Urena guy. I'm not a Lourdes Goriel guy. I'm not really a Pentecost guy. Not so much Rowdy Tellez, and those are kind of guys, depending on how you feel about those guys, kind of really tip how you feel about the system as a whole.
Okay. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. You can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTopFWFB. Me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Yeah, thanks.
Oh, real quick.
Oh,
sorry.
Go.
We in the Padres system, they made a trade with the Blue Jays and they acquired Edward Olivares.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get a chance to cover him because he kind of fell through the cracks here. He was supposed to be in the Toronto system. He would have been my number five guy behind, you know, you'll see my rankings when they come out. He would have been fifth ranked guy. He's put up a very fantastic season. I saw him in low A again. That team was stacked. And they have guys like Joshua Palacios. They had J.B. Woodman, who they traded to the Cardinals for Diaz. What's the guy's last name again? I forget. Edward Olivares. That's it. Yeah. You know, going to the Padres, it's a sneaky as hell ad for the Padres. Olivares, lying in across two levels of A-ball, 269, 327, 468, 27 doubles, 10 triples, 17 homers, and 20 steals. So you can obviously see the athleticism, even poor through the stat line. I watched a couple of video on him. I don't think he's as good as that, but he's more advanced than he should be for his age, so he kind of gets to exploit younger pitching a lot. But ultimately, I do think he could be a low, you know, a 12 to 10 homer and 15 to 20 steal guy in the next level, which is pretty nice. So don't forget about Edward Olivares, who's now a Padre.
There you go. All right. That's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Matt, myself, thanks for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.
Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Trying to get a handle on who we are. Sleep all night with the phone off the hook. Fire.